So today I'd like to explore a topic with you which is very central to being a human being, kind of core aspect of human nature. In fact, if you want to live a wise life, you need to really understand well this particular theme. And that's the theme of desire. Desire is, you know, so central, so inherent to human life, that it's basically almost inconceivable to imagine human life without any desire at all. And so much so that I've been saying lately that the term human beings is probably not the best designation for Homo sapiens, but rather it should be human desirelings. It's so rare that people just be. And if we find ourselves just being, often we find that what we experience is the momentum, the impact of our desiring. Probably some of you sat down here to meditate today and found that the momentum and the power of desire was still driving your mind and your body, and you're still feeling the consequences of it. And it's such a central aspect of human life that encompasses such a huge range of what human beings do. It encompasses some of the worst things that people do. Absolutely horrific things that people do are an expression of forms of desire. And also it's an expression of some of the most beautiful aspects of human life, that some of the most noblest and wonderful things that people do are also expressions of desire. So we have to be very careful then not to look at the word desire in a pejorative term, as if desire is a problem. And sometimes I encounter people trying to explain the Buddha's teachings, and they problematize desire. It's like, desire is bad, you shouldn't have any desire. And the caricature of Buddhism sometimes will come from the teaching that there is suffering, and desire is the cause of suffering, and so you have to put an end to desire. The Buddha never said that. However, it's sometimes a kind of a simplistic caricature of what the Buddha had to say, and then people start scratching their heads and saying, then with no desire, then what? Supposed to give up all my desire? And some people are confused, perplexed, and they just leave. And then other people are not confused and believe it, and then they kind of just give up all their desires. And chances are, from at least a good majority of the people who give up all their desires, they're depressed. It's certainly a symptom of depression, not having any desire. So it's very important to look into this topic of desire. I'm offering the word desire today as kind of a neutral term that covers a full range of human motivation. However, it might be a little bit in English. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I have a little suspicion that in English, if anything, on the spectrum of good to bad, healthy to unhealthy, the word desire is used in our vocabulary, kind of leans in that direction of being kind of bad, independent of Buddhism. So I don't know if you kind of agree with that. And there's a whole bunch of words, like, you know, there's desire, and then there's ambition and greed and clinging. As you get into that, you know, range, into the more unhealthy modes, and then in the healthy modes, you have words like aspiration, inspiration, certainly motivation, intention. Sometimes they have more positive connotations for people. And so I looked up the word desire in my dictionary. And it said the root of the word, the D part in Latin is from, and the zire part apparently comes from the Latin word for star. So, you know, wishing on a star, you know, it's going to come, your desire is going to come from the stars. So maybe there's a kind of, you know, etymological reason why it's a little bit funny, the word desire, kind of wishful thinking, that is kind of connected to the word. But anyway, I'm using the word today as a neutral term. And so the task for anybody who wants to live a wise life is to begin exploring deeply the nature of their own desire. So I'll talk about desire a little bit here today, and I could say a variety of things that, in a sense, can remain very abstract unless you turn this talk around and use it to explore your own heart, your own motivation, what goes on in you. Doesn't mean that I'm right, but you can still, sometimes when someone's wrong, it can still help you clarify something about yourself, right? Because you say, well, that doesn't work for me, so I guess I have a different, works differently for me. So I'll offer you various teachings today about desire, but the important thing is you turn it around and understand your own. They say the Dharma is to be discovered in your own hearts, not in books. So one of the interesting qualities of desire for some people is there are aspects of desire is desires can come really easily. Some people, desires are a dime a dozen. And I can have desire, I can just sit here, just generate. Maybe I have a more desire kind of mind. Some people have more aversive minds. And aversive thoughts are a dime a dozen. But for me, it's like desire, just, you know, they can come really easily. And so one of the things I've learned is just to let them pass through. Well, that's that's interesting, you know. So desires can arise and pass. But they can come quite easily. And then what's interesting is, what do we do with the desire that's arisen? And do we just allow it to pass? We say, oh, that's interesting, or that's nice, or not now, thank you, or maybe I'll, you know, or does it arise in you the interest to explore the desire? What is the nature of this desire? What's happening? What's your relationship to desire? And one of the reasons why this is very interesting is that even the most healthy desires, the most appropriate desires a person can have, can be held in such a way to cause suffering, to cause pain for oneself and for others. So even the desire, say you're hungry, and so it's reasonable to want to have food, so you have desire for food, that desire for food could take the form of gluttony, you know, a kind of a clinging, craving, desperation for food or for particular kinds of food, or, you know, just, you know. So all kinds of desires, even healthy ones, like the desire for liberation in Buddhism, is considered a very important desire for Buddhists to have or could have, can be held very tightly, neurotically, with great expectation, with great striving and pushing, with great demand. Or sometimes it can be held, so clinging-wise, or sometimes it can be held, something, a desire can be held very hesitantly. Kind of, oh, you know, I don't really dare have that desire. Maybe, you know, I have this desire, but maybe I'm not worthy of it, or maybe it's not okay to have a desire. After all, I'm a Buddhist. You know, Buddhists aren't supposed to have desire. It's not supposed to let people know they have desire. In some Buddhist countries, when I was there in Asia, I was told, I don't know if it's true, but I noticed that when people ate, especially when they ate in Buddhist temples, like lay people, they would eat very leisurely, very slowly, and put down. It was very nice, I thought, very nice way to eat, rather than the way I usually eat. I'm kind of a speed eater. So, but I was told, and I don't know, that part of the reason for this is that in a Buddhist culture, you're not supposed to show that you have a lot of desire. You know, you're greedy. So you're supposed to kind of just eat kind of like, as, you know, I don't, like, easy come, easy, I don't have to eat, you know. So I don't know. So there are all kinds of reasons why we hesitate to kind of express our desires, to act on it. And some, there's particular ones in Buddhist circles. Well, not okay to have desires, some people think. And so they could be, we can hesitate around desires, or we can have aversion towards desire. We've been burned before. We've had certain healthy desires. It didn't work out, and therefore I'm never going to fall in love again. I'm never going to do this again because I don't want to be burned. So there can be aversive to desires, even though it might be a healthy desire. So how we hold a desire has a lot to do with the impact it has on us, how much we suffer. Also, there can be desires that in and of themselves cause suffering. They're not healthy to have in the first place. And when the Buddha talked about the cause of suffering, he didn't call it desire. He used, as far as I could tell, a non-technical term, become kind of technical in Buddhism. He used the word thirst. And in Pali, it's tanna. And thirst is very kind of graphic, kind of physical, kind of, you know, you feel this kind of, I don't know, this kind of desperation, this compulsion when you're really thirsting. I need to have it. What? I want. And so the kind of desire that causes suffering is a desire that has compulsion as part of it. There's pressure or drivenness as part of it. And so there's a whole series of words in Buddhism to represent unhealthy desire. And thirst is one of them. Another one is craving. Another one is clinging. So craving and clinging can be unhealthy in and of themselves, and craving and clinging can be latched onto healthy desires. You understand what I'm saying? And then it becomes unhealthy in a sense. Even the best desires become unhealthy if we hold it the wrong way. So, in the graphic language of the Buddha, he said, when there's clinging, it's like holding a hot coal in your hand. And part of the reason, hot coal, that's an interesting image because the image of the word for, one of the words for clinging, upadana, also means fuel. So a coal, right? So both the clinging is both the fuel that burns and clinging. So, so I think it's interesting to look at our lives and look at what the cost of craving and clinging has had in our lives. What's the cost of having kind of compulsive desires? And I've seen certainly huge costs in my life. There are times when I've been amazingly embarrassed that I've acted on compulsion or craving, that later I said, what was I doing? Where did that come from? What was going on? How did I get kind of so caught up in that particular desire? And then there are times I've been quite ashamed, not just embarrassed, but ashamed and by the results of things I've acted on. There's been huge caused pain for people acting on desires that, and then sometimes I acted on unhealthy desires, and then I've made it worse. This is about, you know, a long time ago. And you know, you're trying to cover it up, or and so they could certainly have tremendous cost on our social relationships. Act on the wrong desire, and a friendship that took years to build up can be destroyed in an instant. Desires can, held the wrong way, clinging, craving kind of desires, can take a huge toll on our body. And you can see it in small ways. And if you watch your mind when it's involved in a really juicy kind of desire, wanting something, and the planning mode sets in motion, and the mind just planning and thinking and wanting, and how am I going to get this? And it can be quite exhausting for the mind to be caught up in this kind of activity. Sometimes that kind of activity of kind of planning and desiring and wanting is so engaged in an object, something that we want out there, that there isn't any kind of self-reflection or personal mindfulness to notice the cost it has on us. And we don't realize the exhaustion. You get to the end of the day and say, why am I exhausted? Well, because you spend the day craving. That's why. The most graphic example I can give in my own life of this was when I was younger, I would go into bookstores and leave the bookstores exhausted. You know, I didn't have any money, but I had plenty of desires. I love books and titles. I want that. There can be a tension, physical impact on having desire, craving, clinging. We hold it the wrong way and there's a kind of a tightening up, a lifting up. For me, sometimes I identify a lifting in my belly up into my diaphragm when I'm caught by desire or craving. And sometimes there's an energy in my energetic system, my body kind of rushes up into my head. Because for me, when there's a lot of kind of driven desire, it comes along with a lot of planning and thinking. And so a lot of blood and energy goes up into wherever I think. And desire held the wrong way can lead to craving, to frustration, because it's not fulfilled. We have expectation, we have demands, we have wants. And so it's not, the world doesn't provide it, it doesn't unfold the way we want it, and tremendous frustration can arise. That frustration can lead to anger, and the anger can lead to violence. There can be grief. One of the interesting qualities of too much driven desire, if a person's caught up in the whole world of desire, maybe the point of addiction, there's a kind of, desire has a quality of alienating ourselves from ourselves, even from other people. Sometimes desire has to do, driven desire, craving, planning for it, has to do with fantasy. It's an imagination, what we want. And so that living in the world of imagination, we lose touch with ourselves. And some of you maybe have been on retreat where if you have a whole day of meditation, of just meditating all the time, there's a lot of time for the mind to kind of show us how it actually works if left alone. And it's not always so solitary to see what the mind does when left alone. And one of the things it can do is it can get caught up in desire. And you can sit on retreat for a few hours, kind of just completely mesmerized by some fantasy, an image that the mind has created, desire image. And it's often quite seductive because it's so pleasurable and enjoyable. And then at some point, to wake up from the fact that you're doing this, wake up from the mesmerizing seduction, and to realize that it was exhausting. Even though it was so pleasant in some way, it was also very tiring for the mind to be engaged in that activity. Too much craving, desire, driven desire, caught up in that world of desire, can also lead us to live on the surface of life. Kind of skim the surface and not really plumb to the depths of life. And plumbing to, is that the expression in English? Plumbing? Plummeting?
Yeah,
plumbing.
Plumbing?
Not
plumbing the depths.
Plumbing the depths. dropping down into the depths. one of the really important things in Buddhist practice is finding some way to drop down into the depths of who we are, depths of our being, to live not in a surface dimension of our life, but to, you know, two-dimensionally, but to live three-dimensionally, to drop really deep down and really have a experience of who we are in the deepest, fullest meanings of being a human being. So it's very important to find some way to kind of drop out of the surface and go deeper. And one of the important aspects of our depths of human beings, and some of the most beautiful things of human life, is aspiration. And I love the word aspiration in English because the word aspiration has the word breath in it, the Latin word for breath, like respiration has the word breath in it. Aspiration, and in Latin means to out, so to, or on, to breathe out or to breathe on something. So the idea that it comes out of our breath, comes with our breath, and I associate the breath with some part of my, the depth. The breath meditation is one of the ways to plumb to the depths of our being, to really settle, let go of the surface kind of concerns and chatters, and be able to find out and be in touch with something that's deep within us, deep sense of knowing, deep sense of motivation, deep sense of purpose for our lives. So aspiration is my word for this very beautiful quality of desire, desire at its very best. And if you read the teachings of the Buddha, he expected his practitioners to have strong desire. He really wanted that. He had a variety of words that he encouraged this kind of healthy desire. In one expression he used the word is tapas, which is in his language is ardent. We translate it as ardent. So an ardency. You don't have ardency unless you have desire, right? And he encouraged his practitioners in his time to arouse your desire, arise your desire. You know, He's not going to say that if he thinks desire is bad. You know, rise your desire. You should develop your desire. Have desire. Have energy, energetic desire. Aspiration. There's a whole series of words in Pali that can represent this healthy form of desire. So aspiration is one of them. Translated into English. So to aspire. And so one of the interesting questions, important questions, is how do we get in touch with healthy sense of desire for our lives, intentions for our lives, that maybe we want our whole life to be oriented around, to be what our life is about. Some people have a whole series of different things they want their life to be about, but sometimes we really admire people who really settle on one thing. This is what they're really going to make this the center kind of orientation of my life, and I'm really going to pursue this and really dedicate my life to it. In a sense, that's what the Buddha did. The Buddha had a phenomenal aspiration for liberation, and he made huge life choices, you know, to become a renunciate, to engage in a very arduous exploration in the kind of religious practices of his time in India, in order to kind of discover or find the path to liberation, to walk that path all the way. I don't know why it comes to mind right now. I apologize if it's kind of a non sequitur, but I was actually quite impressed by this. It was an 8-year-old who swam from Alcatraz recently, you know, back to San Francisco. You know, 8-year-old, you know, the coach said, you know, he's an ordinary kid, except that he has persistence, and so he trained. His mom said, okay, if you train, you can do it. So he trained and trained every day, and 8-year-old kid swimming, you know, across the bay. So it's amazing things you can accomplish with a strong sense of purpose. The question is, can that strong sense of purpose be tied to what's healthy? And how do we discover what's healthy? As we know, there can be a tremendously strong sense of purpose and persistence with very unhealthy things in life. And huge, huge, you know, catastrophes happen in our world because some people are stuck on very unhealthy desires. So the question of healthy aspiration then has a lot to do with certainly something like mindfulness practice and awareness practice that helps us get in touch with ourselves, to really know ourselves well, to be able to find deep inside the cues, the reference points for understanding the nature of our desire, the nature of our aspiration. One of the very simple suggestions that Buddhism has around this whole question of healthy aspiration, healthy guidelines for finding it, is to have the sensitivity to recognize that is there any suffering or tension or pressure inherent in that particular aspiration? If there is, then it's probably not going to be healthy. Or if it is, then do more work to kind of separate out the dross from the gold, is that what we call it? Separate out the dross from the gold. Be very, very careful to be sensitive to where the tension and pressure and clinging still might remain. If there is none, then you're much better positioned to know whether it's going to be a healthy aspiration or not. Another thing about finding aspiration is I think it's really important to value ourselves. I think if we don't have deep value for ourselves, for who we are and what our capacities are, what our capabilities are, it's really hard to give ourselves the time to discover and give respect to our heart's deepest aspirations. So we have to value ourselves and to give ourselves that time and be able to listen to ourselves well. I meet a lot of people who dismiss their aspirations. Oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. Oh, I'm not good enough for that. Or I don't have what it takes to do that. What does it take to have an aspiration, a healthy aspiration for your life, and then to follow through on it? It's a very interesting question. What does it take to follow through? And do certain things have to be renounced, let go of? Not because they're bad, because if you're going to do one thing, you can't do everything. So is there some kind of narrowing of focus of your life to really follow through? And that, of course, the answer is often yes, right? Many people in life make that choice all the time. Through all the different choices we have in human life, people narrow the focus in order to do certain things. Go to college and study X, or, you know, pursue different things. One of the ways to live on the surface of life is to want everything. To want, you know, and try to get everything. And I think often in our society, there's all these forces that are encouraging us to want everything. And so we have to stop listening to the external forces and listen to ourselves. And then listening to ourselves, be able to choose between the different desires and wishes we might have and follow through on what can really make a difference in the long term. So I think of aspiration as something coming from our depth. And in coming from that depth, I think of it having a non-discursive source. Desire, or craving, clinging, I think is very much tied up in discursive world. Planning and thinking, imagination, fantasy. And I think of aspiration as something that comes from a non-discursive depths of our beings, from stillness, from resting. And some of the biggest decisions I've made in my life, caused my life to go in a radically different direction. My life's never been the same, you know, after that decision. It came out of times of stillness and silence. Being on retreat, being in often in a meditative environment, and somehow allowing the exploration of what's really important for me and what decisions I was going to make kind of arise in that tremendous depth and stillness of that retreat environment. And then out of me came this almost like a physical knowing. Kind of like my whole body changed, and I knew that's the direction my life was going to take. And it doesn't always work that way, but the idea of giving oneself time to plumb down to the deeper aspirations we can have is very important. I've known plenty of people who have come on retreat, like a 10-day retreat, because they had to make a big decision in their life. And so they wanted to kind of go off someplace, no distractions, really settle on themselves, get really relaxed, and then in that relaxed, settled mode, kind of find out what they really think, what really motivates them. The word aspiration, for me, has connotations of the breath being fluid and relaxed. It has the connotation of me being very open-ended. Aspiration has no expectation as part of it. It's kind of you aspire for something and may it happen. You aspire for something and you work for it and may it happen, as opposed to demand it will happen or it should happen. And I'm actually quite fond of the theistic slogan or saying that's often used, I think, in some theistic circles, where they say they have a wish or they want something to happen, and they end that by saying, God willing. And I guess maybe we'd say Dharma willing, or, you know, I don't know what, but life willing, you know, the idea that that kind of open-ended feeling to it. Oh, you know, may it be, but it might not be. So that open-ended feeling also is connected to physically, because whereas craving is a clutching or clawing or tightening down, aspiration for me is actually relaxing. When you really know what your aspiration is, before you latch onto it, just the aspiration by itself, it actually helps for me to relax. Oh yeah, that's what it's going to be. That's kind of this fountain, sometimes like a fountain kind of coming up from inside, coming out, as opposed to something closing down. Oh yeah, that's what it's about. And there's a tremendous cost for repressed or ignored aspiration, or the tremendous cost in human beings if we never take the time to discover what our aspirations might be, our deepest aspirations. And so that cost you know, certainly can be in living a unfulfilled life. The cost can be in living a shallow life. The cost can be in living with frustration, regrets. All kinds of things can come when we don't give a chance for our aspiration to follow through. One of the costs is we lose touch with something I think is really beautiful. I think one of the most beautiful things in human hearts is healthy aspirations. The aspirations to be of service, the aspiration for liberation, the aspiration for compassion. There's a whole bunch of series of kind of aspirations that, when they're pure, are just the best, you know. And so to repress or lose touch with our aspiration is lose touch with what's most beautiful. So I'll say a few words about how to work with aspiration, how to... And one of the first things I would like to say is it's important to appreciate it, the importance of it. And never let anyone tell you that the Buddhist path is asking you to let go of your desires. The Buddhist path includes your desires by including your aspiration, the right aspiration, the right intention. And it's supposed, not only supposed to include it, it's supposed to actually become quite ardent and strong. So appreciating it, valuing it. Then give it time and space to show itself. I mentioned earlier. Give time and space. One of the values of meditation practice is sometimes to settle ourselves enough to see what we really think and what we really believe and what we really want. And also give it time and space for it to grow. Aspiration is, I think of aspiration as sometimes as being very shy for some people. And it needs time and space to grow. And if you fill your life with kind of surface desires and don't give time for the deeper aspirations, it's not going to grow. It's not going to develop and become strong. So then nourish it. Find ways of nourishing it. Nourishing it by appreciating it. Nourish by acting on it. Nourish it by being with other people who have the same aspiration. Nourish it by having it perhaps appreciated by others or celebrated. Sometimes it's good to celebrate your aspirations. And acting on it is really important. On aspirations that are never acted on, I suppose they atrophy. You know, aspirations are never act on is, you know, it's nice, but I don't know what good that is. And another way of working with aspiration that I think is very important is to stay in touch with your physical body, our embodied sense of self. And also with the present moment. Staying in touch with the body helps you to be aware, have the sensitivity to know when there's clutching or clinging or resistance or aversion that's come into play around the aspiration. If you want to stay open and relaxed around it and let it kind of be a fountain rather than something we close down, the body will teach you that, will show you that. And if you can stay in the present moment around an aspiration, some aspirations might have to do with the future, and then you have to hold the future thinking very wisely, but really train yourself to be in the present a lot so that the you get the feedback system that the present moment provides. The present moment will teach you all this stuff. So he help you to hold it in a healthy way. And finally, one of the noble aspirations in Buddhism is the aspiration for liberation. And to throw kind of a curve ball on this whole talk, whether it's healthy desire or unhealthy desire, human desirelings, human beings, are I've often a lot of desires. Sometimes what we want is something not to exist. And kind of aversion is also kind of desire. And there can be healthy desires and unhealthy desires. And it's just a regular phenomenon in the human mind, human heart, desires. If you're on the, if you get out on the freeway today, Highway 101, you could actually stay on freeways, I think, for the rest of your life without ever having to get off. Maybe to get gas, but otherwise, I mean, they're all connected, all these freeways in America, and you just drive on freeways. And it can be an endless, you know, freeway trip, and there's beautiful freeways, and you love driving down them, and there's, you know, rush hour traffic freeways with smoke and smog, and not nice freeways, but there's all these freeways. All these, you know, go free, you can kind of live in your car and just drive on a freeway forever. And most of us, I think, find that a very unappealing prospect, of spending the rest of our life on a freeway. And we'd like to kind of get off, at least to a rest stop. So to always be have the mind engaged in desire, whether it's healthy desire or unhealthy desire, is kind of like always on a freeway. And one of the things the Buddha teaches is that it's also possible to get off the freeway of desire. You don't have to always be living with desire as being a quality or characteristic of the mind. And that one of the healthy aspirations, healthy desires, is to create the causes and conditions that can help make it bring you to the end of all desire, at least temporarily. It's one of the great things to not have any of this activity and movement of desire, even aspiration. Then that puts the mind at a phenomenal peace. And so the aspiration for liberation, which is very important, needs to be developed and cultivated and appreciated and all that, is not meant to kind of stay there forever, but it's meant to bring you to a place where actually you can let the mind come to this phenomenal rest of what you call in Buddhism liberation or freedom. So it's kind of like, you know, you would like to go visit the Pacific Ocean and you're really far from it. And so it takes some motivation to get over the distance and get it all together to go visit the Pacific. And then once you get there, though, you're on the beach looking at the ocean, that the desire for the Pacific falls away. But you need the desire in order to get there, but once you're there, it falls away. So you need to have the desire for liberation, but with liberation, it falls away. And what some people do is, hearing that, they think, oh, I'm supposed to give up my desires right away, early on, before, you know, I've gotten to the Pacific. So you have to be very careful not to let go of desires too quickly. There's healthy desires to have. They should be appreciated and strengthened and discovered and acted on. And when they're acted on thoroughly, then we can let go of them. So I hope that this gave you some material today to reflect on. I hope, to me, this is so central and so important to the whole Buddhist enterprise, to understand the nature of desire and to really explore it deeply. I hope at least for the next week that you'll try to remember some of these things I've been saying today, and explore them in your life, in your heart, find out what's going on. Talk to your friends about them. If you have friends here, maybe you can have set up time for, you know, coffee during the week, lunch or something together, and just let's talk about this thing, desire and aspiration, a little bit and explore it. Do whatever you can. And I hope you'll never, ever again, or never say, I hope you'll never, ever have the notion that it's bad to have desire, which in some Buddhist circles they still have that notion sometimes. What you need to do is differentiate between different kinds of desire, and then in that differentiation choose the healthy ones. So may your desires bring you and everyone else lots of health. Thank you.